Deadwood Soundlab.
Before we begin the show, I just want to note that this is the first half of our batch episode. You can go to patreon.com/redwoodsoundlabs to hear the entire episode uncut. And I want to note that every single batch episode is there for free. You don't have to pay for Patreon to listen to it. We just wanted to point you over to that direction. And if you feel like it, $5 a month gets you all kinds of extra content that we have. So once again, patreon.com/redwoodsoundlabs. And I hope you enjoy this little segment.
This is Fields of Glory, the batch episode for Batch 5, Child Labor. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Biggs.
And Biggs, we watched three kids' movies from three different decades. We watched National Velvet from 1944, in which a 12-year-old Elizabeth Taylor enters a horse that she wins in a raffle in the Grand National, and then is the jockey in the Grand National, and wins the Grand National as a 12-year-old. We then watched The Black Stallion from 1971, in which a young boy is shipwrecked with a black horse, and dang if they don't bond and then get rescued and then run a race against two other horses, and they win! Can you believe it? It's the same thing that happened in National Velvet, kind of, sort of, not really. And then we took a turn here in 1992, The Mighty Ducks, which you had not seen until we sat down for this show. Gordon Bombay, disgraced lawyer, convicted of drunk driving, hired to coach youth hockey team made up of misfits, aka stereotypes, and believe it or not, they win it all. It is the fifth batch. I'm not going to name all the movies, but Batch 4 was Family Matters. Batch 3 was Off the Bench. Batch 2, Losing the Bid Game. Batch 1, Formative Sports Films. That was last season. Here we are, first batch of season 2. What are your takeaways? What are your thoughts?
The Mighty Ducks really screwed up doing this batch episode. It really screwed it up. It's so hard to find thematic things that run between all three of these movies. It's so wildly different from the other two in so many ways. And I came up with a couple of things.
Yeah.
But it wasn't easy. I had to really, really work on getting it. And usually we have one that sort of veers off a little bit, or you'll get three of them where like you get two over and over again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, usually I don't have to burn this much rubber to figure it out. But man, oh man, Mighty Ducks just sits alone in this batch.
It separates, doesn't it? If people go back and listen to the draft episode, they'll hear how it got here. It was not part of the original draft. And a lot of it is I didn't really draft four batches as much as you did. The next batch, Hustlin', I think will be much more coherent. Maybe not. We'll see.
I think it will be.
Yeah, they are technically all three kids' movies to some extent. And the one thing that I told you kind of in a text, and we'll get into this maybe in more particular detail later, is that two of these movies are very clearly about kids. Like, we are following, to some extent, Velvet, and we are following Alec in National Velvet and in The Black Stallion. We are in these kids' lives and we're following these kids. And then when you watch The Mighty Ducks, it's about a lawyer who is like busted on a DUI and has to learn that winning isn't. And also there's kids in it.
There just happens to be kids.
They don't take up much of the, there's the stuff in the beginning where they're like pranking people, right? They're like getting the dog to eat the thing and we kind of follow them. But that's like just kids being like goofy. It's not like, you know, the drama in their lives, which is what we get kind of in the other two movies. I don't know. That to me was the biggest glaring difference.
I have to say too, this feels a little bit closer to the kids' movies that we grew up with, like The Mighty Ducks, not just in terms of the time, but I think structurally, it's so much more like I expect a kids' movie to be.
Yeah.
You know, like that adult being at the center, that's usually how these are structured, or at least the ones we grew up with.
You said in the text that it's part of what they mean when they say for the whole family, like fun for the whole family. We need a kids movie that doesn't just speak to kids. So we center an adult protagonist to some extent. like, you do this in Hook too, right? Like, except it's Robin Williams, right? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, but it's Robin Williams who's acting like a kid in the back end of the movie, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you're being selective with who you pick to put in the center of the frame. But in Mighty Ducks, they're like, we're going to throw all of these kids at you. So the kids collectively have as much screen time as Emilio Estevez. It's just that you don't get to know any of the kids particularly well because he is the center of the frame.
Just Charlie, for the sake of Charlie's mom is single, and even Charlie is like, Emilio, maybe you should go for my mom? It's so weird. It's like, we could, like, maybe there's a world where Charlie isn't sure about Gordon, or that Charlie wants to vet Gordon a little. I don't know. Like, that you could really imagine a world. I said with the National Velvet episode, if we take Velvet's story seriously, that movie could be really intense. Like, 12-year-old riding the Grand National, holy cow, that'd be nuts. Instead, we get a girl who wishes to God that she has horses, wonderful horses, and then she gets the horses and she runs a race, and then that's it. That's the end of her story. But I don't know. It's very strange to me. When you look at Bell Hooks's, many contributions to film criticism, one of the ones that really jumps out is how she talks about the difference between just representation, mere representation, and standpoint. And mere representation is, are you in the frame? Do you exist on screen? And for marginalized folks, obviously, it's a big if for generations of cinema, but also definitely for kids. It's like, where are kids in movies and what kind of movies are made for kids? We talked in the Black Stallion episode how an art movie is not supposed to be for kids.
Typically, no.
Right. The Mighty Ducks has kids in it. It definitely has kids in it, representation, but I don't know, there's a lot of standpoint going on there. Just not much.
No. I couldn't come up with anything deep that connect these three as hard as I tried. I hit so many things where I was racking my film brain, and even looking at how they set up shots.
Yeah.
You know, like, you were telling me to really think about how the Mighty Ducks was put together because we talked about the cinematic components of the first two. And I'm just like thinking back on the movie and I'm like, it's generic movie. Like, it's kids movie is structured like this. I feel like from our generation, which is just like, it's a lot of mid shots. You have one or two shots that are like the fun shots that they do, and that's it. Like, it's not showy. Like, the editing's not showy at all. It's like, this is a Disney movie. This is what Disney movies look like. You know what it looks like.
We get a camera on the back of a puck.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm talking about. That's one of the, like, right. the fun
That's one
shots,
of the
right?
cool gimmicky shots. Yep.
You can count on that every single time in a Disney movie. Like, the fun shot and cool runnings is when they're like going down the track super fast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you get the head on.
And that's where you're breaking the convention of how you were shooting it before. And they'll always do this once, maybe twice, and that's it. And in this one, I feel like it was once. It's that puck cam that we talked about. But the rest of it is just like close-ups and mid-shots, you know?
It's interesting because in our episode on Cool Runnings, we talked about how John Candy's character is weird. He's this funny guy who has no jokes, and yet he's kind of the center of the story in a bunch of weird ways. But we still get moments with the main characters in that movie where their lives matter and we follow them. Yes, they're crass stereotypes, but it's weird to make the comparison. Both of these, and here's the kind of lurking variable, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. National Velvet's based on a book. The Black Stallion is based on a famous story in a book. The Mighty Ducks is, what did we say? Oh yeah, Synergy. It is Disney. Yeah. It is the Disney Corporation wishing upon a star that they could make a few more billion next year than they made this year. And lo and behold, they find ways to do it. And it is so evident when you put them in comparison to these other movies where it's like, there's no story here. This is just like chunk, 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 like punch the whole thing out and buy a hockey team and maybe they will go to the Stanley Cup. I don't know. It's wild.
And it's also kind of based off the Bad News Bears, which I said a couple of times, but it's also what Disney loves to do, which is go with a formula, right? Like we still see that with the Disney Corporation. It's just a different formula.
Yeah.
Like you look at Pixar, they have their particular thing that they always do. It's typically a boy growing up and like having to face something.
Yeah.
Occasionally you throw in a girl, but not very often. It just happens like maybe twice. Marvel movies, you're going to have that hero and then somebody close to him is going to look like they died. And then guess what? They didn't really die. And, you know, like you can count on these formulas every single time. And the Mighty Ducks is no different. The first thing I want to say that all three of these have in common kind of stems from a conversation we had in season one, where you were noting that all the movies we picked, very rarely do they win the whole thing. And you were saying, like, you think it happens that they don't really come through more often than we might think.
Yeah.
And I would maintain, if you think about kids' movies, they always come through in kids' movies.
Win.
And that's so many sports movies.
Yeah. All three of these, they win the championship, don't they? Or they win the big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like all three of them, they're like learning some kind of lesson about like how it's not really about the win, but then they get the win anyway. It's that whole have your cake and eat it too thing.
Like the Karate Kid, he wins the whole thing. Major League, they don't win the whole thing.
No.
Rocky, we said the ending is like it's like a push. Apollo technically wins, I suppose. Bring It On, they don't win.
Yeah, the next three was losing the big game, so that was kind of put together in that sense.
Rudy gets a sack. Rudy got that one sack, didn't he? Good for him. Okay, he didn't exactly
they win the Orange Bowl, but it's impossible to tell whether that was the championship or not, because they switched off with the Rose Bowl all the time as to which was the championship game. So who knows?
This is fascinating. So a big part of the kind of like Any Given Sunday or Major League kind of movies is going to be that they come together to win a quarterfinal or semifinal game. And then the epilogue will be like, yeah, we lost the big game, but we came together in the moment to get there or something like that. I don't know.
Well, Major League, they just win the pennant, right? Because baseball has that added thing. At the time, it was just two teams in each league make the pennant.
Right.
And then they face off to go to the World Series. So there wasn't even a quarterfinal in baseball at that time. Mm. There is now, but there wasn't then.
But with kid movies, the message is very straightforward, and for this, we're going to go to the Karate Kid soundtrack. You're the best! You're the best, kid! Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to do. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. You're the best, man. You're the best. Like, you're going to win the whole damn thing. That's a good point. Like, I don't know. I wonder, you know, it'll be fun. We don't have a whole lot of other kids' movies on the list for this season, but this is a fun test just generally for kids' sports movies. Do they or don't they win the whole smash? Yes or no? And if they do, it's part of a basic formula, it would seem. I don't know. It's a binary choice. In either way, you could get a trend, I suppose, but it's a good note. It's worth looking at.
Yeah, and there might be some that test that, but man, I can't think of any. Everything I think of, they win it all, you know, or at least win whatever thing that they're coming up against.
There was one other trend that I noted, but really only after you mentioned it. And two-thirds of it is just because of Mickey Rooney. But it is that at the center of these movies, there are kids in these movies, but at the center of this movie is like a redeemable dude, a dude that needs to be redeemed. In National Velvet, Mickey Rooney's character is a thief. He is a thief until he's not. In The Black Stallion, I don't know that we get this like backstory where he's this big washed out, washed up has-been, but he is kind of cast as the guy that whistled his way out of National Velvet. I don't know. We had a fun little chat about that. But at the end of the day, we don't really know anything about this guy, yet he is the kind of center of the second part of the movie that gives the kid the opportunity. And then with Mighty Ducks, it's like when you stop and look at Gordon Bombay, I don't even know why we care, I said in that episode. And then I texted you, he gets a guy off at the beginning of the episode. They're like, he belongs in jail or prison or whatever. And we don't even know what that guy did. Like, what if he like killed someone, Biggs? Then suddenly the Mighty Ducks is dark. Like,
gotta go for the W every time.
And what about justice? I mean, that man, he should be in jail.
It was your job to put him there, so don't take it out on me. Next time, do your job, Frankie boy. 30-0, I remain undefeated. What about the
Fraser case? I don't know that Gordon Bombay is someone that we can uncritically cheer for. All three of these movies, because they've got that adult in there, they're like centering on that kind of male protagonist in weird ways, right?
Yeah. And I would say, I guess the redemption for Mickey Rooney is he was trying to farm and he couldn't stand it. And so he gets to go back into the thing he loves. But I don't know that he's redeeming so much as just going back to what he wants. So I guess it actually falls apart there. These are hard movies to put together. They really are.
They really are. It's interesting. I will tie up a loose end from that Black Stallion episode. If people go back, they'll hear a good conversation about whether or not a Muse's character is or is not a magical Negro, and he fits so many of the trends I said. But the one thing that I was missing was, like, how does he kind of motivate the protagonist? And you said it, and I said it, and we kind of touched on it and jumped around it. It's not so much that his advice is incorrect. Like, he says, you know, don't race that horse.
Yeah.
And then your interpretation is that when he tries to stop the horse is losing, but then when he lets the horse go, the horse wins. My interpretation is that he just races the horse, but he does find the horse. He does show up magically out of nowhere and say, oh, you're looking for a horse. Well, here's your horse.
Hey. What happened to you?
Everything.
Everything? That's a whole lot. Can't be everything.
Oh, you lost a black horse.
Yeah. Have you seen him? Do you know where he is?
Napoleon? Did you tell me you saw a black stallion?
Well, what did he say?
He says, well, not really far from here. Just past the dairy. Out of a big black barn, and you see a long bunch of skinny trees as you walk along. Then you go right by a morning star.
And because he's able to do that, the plot continues. So I think it fulfills all. I said before it was like most. Now I'm like, it's definitely all of those tropes. There it is. But I do think it's interesting that all sports movies, to some extent or another, are going to have a coach. And the relationship between the player and the coach could be any number of things. It doesn't have to be, yes, coach, you're right, coach. Those magic words that coaches the world over long to hear. Typically, it can be a lot more antagonistic, right? But in these movies, you've got Mickey Rooney, who believes in the horse, and then when he has to believe in Velvet, he does.
But she doesn't necessarily believe in him, in that she's not really doing the things that he's telling her at the very end, right? She's like, just decide she's going to race the horse and not practice or anything. So that's weird, because that's in juxtaposition with the Black Stallion, where the kid does take what Mickey Rooney says as gospel, except for being truthful to the parents, right?
Yeah.
And then in the Mighty Ducks, you get one of each. Like, like, they don't believe in him until they do.
I will say what's very interesting is that, and we mentioned this in the episode, is that the mother in National Velvet has an ultimate arc that is very disappointing, but as a character, she is far more present than any of the other mothers in any of these other movies. In the Mighty Ducks, Charlie's mother is pretty much there to yell at him at the beginning of the movie and then fall in love with him and be the romance interest at the end. With the Black Stallion, we said the mother as character has like nothing. She's literally there to just be overcome, and that's it. She has no purpose at all. The dad who dies does more than the mom who lives and exists in this child's life. But in 1944, we have a mother who swam the English Channel and has a bunch of prize money and believes in her daughter when no one else will, and tells her she can do it. And she does do it. That's wild. That I did not see that coming when we set out to watch these movies. That was bizarre.
And you started to stumble into something that I found that all three of these movies have in common, which is all of them have mothers that support their kids playing the sport despite not trusting the trainers.
Yeah.
Like, the mother in National Velvet doesn't trust Mai.
Yeah.
In Black Velvet, he's like telling the kid to lie to his mom.
She trusts him more than the dad does in National Velvet, because his dad was her coach. So she wants to give him a shot.
But she knows that he lied and still gives him a shot, right?
Right. She will not tell him the story of his father until the very end of the movie because he has to earn his way. He can't trade on it.
Oh, yeah. I guess that applies, too. I was actually talking about the Black Beauty because the mother knows that he lied to, like, because there's this race. So she knows for a fact when the kid tells her that she was lied to and she still lets him race.
There's the scene that he shows up and she's like, oh, funny, you should show up because she just learned that this was all a lie.
Yep. And then in The Mighty Ducks, the mom doesn't trust Emilio Estevez because he drives out onto the pond right away. And then later he apologizes and suddenly she trusts him. I mean, she kind of chastises him before they kiss, but man, that was quick to the kiss.
It's a hard pivot. Once you go looking for the they fall in love moment in movies, I tell my students, it really feels like cutting corners through the grocery store. It's like, that's a hard turn and it's very sudden and abrupt. And in a movie, anything is possible, I suppose, but geez, what happened?
Dude, I just thought of another thing these three movies have in common.
What?
Velvet falls in love with the horse. The Boy in the Black Beauty falls in love with the horse. The Kids and the Mighty Ducks fall in love with ducks. There we go. They've embraced nature, I guess.
One of the things that we noted for the two movies that doesn't fit for the third is definitely the relationship between the kids and the animals. We talked about this in the Black Stallion episode, but we'll touch it here. In the National Velvet movie and the Black Stallion, again, several decades apart, made by very different people, this is a trend that I think you can see in a lot of other kids' movies. It's very basic. The grown-ups want to own and commodify and control the animal. And the kids want to love the animal and know the animal and exist with the animal. And because the animal trusts the kid and the kid trusts the animal will be exactly the animal it's supposed to be. It will fulfill its beast of burden role for society, but only because of that, like, humanizing relationship. The Mighty Ducks doesn't get us this. They have to be convinced to like the duck mascot with the big speech. You get that big speech. It's a locker room speech. It's why the ducks are so great. And it's because they fly in formation. So obviously this kind of falls apart there. But I think that if it's a kid and their animal kind of movie, this will be that's a pretty basic stencil that you would see.
Yeah, it loosely connects. That's all three that I had.
Well, I have one more. And I'm curious. And I did text you a little bit on this. And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it. Is that one of the more basic things that I go looking for just in terms of how a movie works is just like, what does a movie do in terms a scale? How does it make large things large and how does it make small things small? Is our protagonist supposed to be big or are they supposed to be small? I feel like if you look at certain movies based on literally where they are in the movie will tell you we're crushing this character down or we're opening this character up to give them possibility. With National Velvet and Black Stallion, because they are so similar in terms of the story, it's a young child entering a big race with large animals. The scale story here is pretty straightforward. There's a lot of lead up to the race. There's just, you know, like 5-10 minutes of build up before the race even happens with just a lot of activity and grown-ups measuring things and weighing things. And the kid is just like in the flow of it all and trying to get to the starting line. And then there's just the size of the animal. With the National Velvet, it's like the running of the hooves and the pounding of the hooves. And then with the Black Stallion, we said it was the microphone on the underside of the horse with the breathing and the pounding and all of that. Scale there is very much making the children very small. With Black Stallion, vulnerability is the word. Like, Velvet is not, she's precious, but she's not vulnerable. The child in Black Stallion, just the look on his face is so terrified. He looks so afraid. And I feel like both of these movies are just like, these are small, vulnerable children. With Mighty Ducks, we got concussed kids coming off the ice. We throw them on the bench and turn around and be like, all right, ducks, here's what we got to do.
Come on! I don't want to go to school today, Mom.
Carp, how many fingers am I holding up? Carp, are you okay?
Jeez, look at this.
The Carpster. You just had to stop the puck. Mr. Carpellani.
Get him on the bench, Charlie. Okay. Oh. Okay, ducks. We still got a chance here. Connie, Terry, Jesse, Gee, Time for the secret weapon.
Like, they're not doing that. There's a little bit of an element where we are frequently looking up at the big boxy scoreboard and we're watching the numbers on the scoreboard. There's like that. And it opens and closes with the big shot where Gordon has to take the big shot and it's one-on-one, the one guy on the ice with the other guy on the ice. And that's a big moment. And I feel like the music builds it up to some extent. But the scale element there is more about making the game itself kind of large and imposing and not so much that the kids are tiny. And again, this is a product of us following the kind of male protagonist at the center of the story. But that was kind of my note just in terms of just how scale works in these movies. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, so I thought a lot about how scale works in the Mighty Ducks. And you hit a couple of the things already. The only other thing that I really noticed, and they do it a couple of times, the kids look up at Fulton Reed because he's supposed to be so big, and they do that thing where you can tell they're shooting from the ground and they're looking up to give him this imposing figure to let you know that he's the enforcer, right? Like, and we don't see a lot of evidence of him being an enforcer. We see a lot of evidence of him having a power shot, but the way that they shoot him with the camera a couple of times, that's what gives you the idea that this is a big tough kid.
The sound effects when he hits it, and that's where we get the puck cam, is when he hits it. He gives us the puck cam, and those are all scale moments. They don't make him a big bully, we said, and that was pretty cool. I kind of appreciated that element of it. I really started noticing this. There's a great article, The Visceral Politics of V for Vendetta on Political Affect in Cinema. This is Brian Ott in the Critical Studies of Media Communication 2010, and it's a very straightforward article, and I think I've mentioned it on the show, but if you watch V is for Vendetta, there's a lot of very small spaces that get smaller and smaller and smaller, and then all of a sudden it gets big. And if you look at just the space that the characters are in, and then you follow the plot of the movie, frequently, not always, the people that are making the movie are using structural elements, like I said, to kind of compress characters before they open them up or something. And I really notice it every year when I study the movie Contact with my students. If you watch that movie with Jodie Foster, I feel like there's a lot of effort in that movie in not only making people in general, but definitely the main character in particular, just small, so small, very insignificantly small, but also magical and beautiful and poignant and precious. And you can see it not only in the words and the narrative, but in just the way that shots happen. And I looked at it with these movies, and again, I think that what really jumps out to me between the three of these is that one of these is made by a corporation. And we talked about the really great article. We got a bunch of good cuts for this, but the Jeff Ostrove article, Disney Synergy in Anaheim, California, The Political Economy of the Mighty Ducks. This is in the Political Economy of Communication 2015. It just talks about how if this movie stands out, it's because a corporation punched it out like so many cupcakes. No. So, Biggs, let me ask you this question. Ready? Disney's punching out all these movies because they're the Disney Corporation. But behind the scenes with Black Stallion, we have this guy named Francis Coppola or whatever. He's punching out a bunch of movies. He's just churning them out.
Not at that time, though.
Not, right.
I told the story, but
he's trying. Like, that's what he wants to do. Yeah, he's burnt all of his credibility, so he can't. But at the same time, production-wise, that's what he wants to do. What's the difference? It's such a huge difference. Why is it so different?
The difference is because, okay, so if you look at Francis Ford Coppola's company at the time, you could be like, I know who the guy at the top of that is. I know how they're putting together movies because it's based off of his taste. And it makes sense, you know, like you're looking at who he's employing as a composer. You're looking at the types of stories he's telling and how he's telling them. And it makes sense. Like you see this kind of artful thing with a lot of music. It makes sense. That's what a lot of his movies are.
Yeah.
And if you look at the MGM company back in the 40s when National Velvet comes out, you know what an MGM movie is too, because they're not this gigantic conglomerate. I don't know if there was even a conglomerate at that time, but if there was, it certainly was an MGM. And they were big for movies, but you know, movies weren't as big as they are now. So you knew that Louis B. Mayer was the tastemaker and he had a stable of writers and they wrote everything. That movie Mank that came out, that guy wrote on everything at the time. Like, if he didn't write the script himself, he had his fingerprints on it and was helping people put it together. So it's like these samey kind of people all the time. But Disney is a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. You have a CEO at the top at the time for a while. Well, at the time, it was Michael Eisner, who's a movie guy, but he's also overlooking amusement parks and all these other things.
Yeah.
And then you have like the people below him, and none of them are creative guys. One guy's overseeing the movies, one guy's overseeing the parks, one guy's overseeing merch, one guy's overseeing the TV arm, right? Like one guy's seeing the cable arm. Like you have all of this stuff. And then below that, you've got your general producers. And then below that, like, so it's all cooked up inside Disney. And by the way, if you look at where MGM's now, which I believe they're owned by Amazon now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not like they're that different now. It definitely is a marking of the time in a way. Because you look at the 90s and all of these companies were like that at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like Disney stood alone on that front. It's just that we're facing the past where that wasn't really a thing. And that's another reason why these really don't work cohesively together with the Mighty Ducks, is because the movie making business is just so different in the 80s. Like we spent a bunch of time talking about that on the watch along for A League of Their Own. But like, it's true. Like once Coca-Cola came in, and I pick on Coca-Cola because they're the easiest one to remember, but it's literally all the movie companies. Like people just came in and they started making demands. I mean, Gulf Western ate up Paramount in the 70s and they started making demands and making stuff more like a product rather than a piece of art. And so that's why we're seeing this stark contrast. I didn't enjoy National Velvet, but I can look at it and be like, that was somebody's vision on the screen. I look at the Mighty Ducks. I don't know that that's a person's vision. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like here's your guardrails of what you're going to do.
But it became an actual hockey team. It's like a throwaway story for Disney that becomes a real hockey team.
Yeah. You know what it is, so you can hand a kid a piece of paper. And I think of this as like National Velvet or Black Stallion. Like, here's a piece of paper, color all you want on the paper, but only color on the paper, right? And they'll do that. And then Disney says, there are these margins on this paper, and then you can only color up to this line, and then you have to color this color up to that line, and then this third color up to this line. Yeah. Like, they have regimented that piece of paper, and you have to, like, cookie cutter, and whatever you come up with has to go within the margins in those lines. That's what it feels like to me. And that's not ripping on Mighty Ducks. That's just like all of the big corporate movies at that time, like to now, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's just how it's kind of done. So that's it for the Batch episode. Once again, we have the other half available at patreon.com/redwoodsoundlabs. You can get it all for $5 a month, or you can just listen to the Batch episodes absolutely for free. There's a couple other pieces of content for free there as well. So thank you very much for joining us, and I'll see you next week. Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.